Welcome to the Closet Mastery Course, creating a magical space where children love to learn. You are listening to Lesson 2, The 5 Rules of Engagement. Rule 2, Be Present. Your presenter is Mary Ann Johnson.
In this lesson, you will learn about Rule 2 of the 5 Rules of Engagement, the art of being present. Its value and ways to practice more presence in your daily activities. This is the second hardest thing for parents. What does it mean to be present? It means to be engaged heart, mind, and soul. It means you aren't washing dishes, folding laundry, or talking on the phone. Sometimes parents feel trapped during structured family learning time. They dread the time spent and want to get out and take care of all the important things they have to do that day. This feeling happens when we have another agenda banging around in our head. In order to be present with our children and enjoy structured family learning time, in fact, relish the time with them, you must change the agenda in your head from all that you have to do to this one thing. That you really want to be with your children and help them find a love of learning. My friend Annette is fabulous. She is supremely talented and giving. She is so giving that she often ends up just too busy. Because of all the projects that she has going in her life, she sometimes feels trapped during structured family learning time. She can't focus and be present because she just can't stop thinking about all that she has to do. One day she said to her kids, "Guys, I'm so busy today. Let's just let structured family learning time go." Her kids replied, "That's okay, Mom. We'll just do it without you." They really loved the structure and consistency of the time. When my daughter Marie was about 3, she and I had an experience that opened my eyes to the importance of being present, even for small amounts of time. I was in the middle of a sewing project. I do not love sewing. Worse, this project had a deadline, which was fast approaching. Marie kept coming in and bothering me. She asked questions, whined about this and that, asked for food, and on and on. Finally, I was ready to yell, maybe swat. Fortunately for me, a thought came into my mind from somewhere outside of myself. I like to think that Heavenly Father was teaching me this principle. The thought was, why don't you just hug her? So that is what I did. I gathered her up and I hugged and I said, I love you. She went off happy as a clam and, interestingly enough, never came back. She just wanted a moment of my presence. I have a friend and a student who has 9 children, all under 11 living with her right now. She was distracted, interrupted, and overly busy one day. They just never got to structured family learning time. The children were awful, fighting, noise, making messes. Finally, just before dinner, she just stopped, and they had some structured family learning time. She asked me later if it was the right thing to do. She wondered if she did it because she felt that she owed it to them. I responded, "No, you didn't owe it to them. You gave it to them because you love them and it was the right thing to do." It made a difference in the rest of the day. They calmed down. Things were more peaceful. They enjoyed eating and being with each other for the rest of the evening. Sometimes all children want is just a moment of our presence. Time and attention is a rare and valuable gift we can give to those we love. Give them that gift. There are a number of reasons for and advantages to being present. I'd like to share them with you. 1. Being present gives you the opportunity to play with, instruct, and share with your children. Tannen, who is 10, said, "I like structured family learning time. It gives us a chance to do fun stuff together. We learn stuff together. That's what I like most. We used to find our own things and just do it ourselves. This is an opportunity to do it together." Listen to this interesting email I received from a mother that I was coaching. I did have a hectic day last week in which the 3-year-old was napping. It was closet time. The 10-year-old was doing it, and I was trying to cook dinner. Plus, I had a headache and wasn't terribly engaged, even if I was present. The 10-year-old told me it was more fun when I played with them. So if an emergency comes up, I put off closet time. When I asked this mom what her greatest mental hurdle to using the closet effectively was, she replied that she didn't have any mental hurdles. However, her email told me otherwise. She had some difficulty understanding some of the key elements to success in working with the closet as an educational tool. First, she isn't really honoring her commitment to her children to create and then consistently hold a structured family learning time. Her daughter was clearly saying, "Mom, what about our time?" As she said, "If an emergency comes up, I put off structured family time." In this letter, her emergency was cooking dinner. She was running late. She had obviously been putting off her structured family learning time all day. That means she had had a string of interruptions and many emergencies that she let push it right out. Secondly, she isn't clear about what it means to be present. She was there physically, but she wasn't present. That was her daughter's complaint. Children desire our presence, not just our bodies. Thirdly, her 3-year-old was napping. I'd like to comment on small children in this structured family learning time. If you have ever noticed, it is about 3 that preschools, daycares, and churches start having classes for children. In these classes, they do short activities, read stories, and play. It is different than a nursery, where we find children 2 and under. It is really valuable from your children's earliest days to introduce them to learning. However, there are challenges with small children under 2, and we'll cover that in greater detail later. What I want to say here is that children 3 and over should be included as much as possible because they are ready. They learn by observing you and by observing older siblings. They give older siblings a chance to serve and teach what they are learning. It is easier if small children are not included. If we leave them out, it is usually for our own comfort and ease. Finally, there is no closet time. There is structured family learning time, school time, homeschool, kids' school, but not closet time. The closet is a tool used in conjunction with other educational tools and systems to create a love of learning atmosphere in a home. When this mother chooses to not be present, she chooses to lose the opportunity to play, instruct, and share with her children. As I said earlier, being true to this structured time and staying present can be a challenge for many parents. The closet cannot solve the problem of schedules that are too full, parents that are too busy, or parents that are not committed to creating atmospheres that foster a love of learning. It is, after all, only a tool. The 5 rules of engagement, however, when understood and lived, can assist parents in these areas. 2, when you are present, you can model what you want. Although you will rarely get to read it, you should show up for family learning time prepared to learn with a book or writing materials. It's important for your children to know that you value learning, that it excites you. Don't be afraid to share your ahas with your children. Have familiar conversations with them. You can say, "Do you know what I read last night? I never knew that. I really like this book because..." Make your comments age appropriate. If your children respond, continue the conversation. If not, let it go. You can even do this with very small children. Eventually, you want your child to read, discuss, think, and then write and discuss some more. Begin giving them experience with that process from the earliest age by modeling what you want and by engaging in familiar conversations. One day, I had one of those kinds of conversations with my 2-year-old grandson. We were letting balloons go in the yard. "Hey, Jack, do you know this balloon floats because it's filled with helium?" He smiled. That's it. That's the whole conversation. But Jack has now heard the word helium, and when he hears it again, it won't be unfamiliar. 3. Being present helps with closet management and order. When you're working with children, it helps to be there. It is helpful to them to be reminded to put one thing away before getting another out. It is helpful to them to have help using paint, chemicals, water, glue, and so forth. It's helpful to them when you help them negotiate the contents of the closet. No one likes to engage in chaos. We all do better in an orderly space. Children are not miniature adults. They will not behave in adult ways. They do not think like adults. We often forget that. I know this is true when I hear phrases like, "Didn't you think about that? What were you thinking?" You can see that, right? The truth is that they often don't see what we see. Children don't make messes because they are naughty. They happen because children are young and inexperienced. They forget about things. They don't see the importance of some things, and they get excited. You help them and yourself if you stay present. You aren't there to micromanage and make sure everything stays neat as a pin, but you are there to make sure your children are safe, your furniture is safe, and that you don't have a closet too jumbled to use. I'm going to share a remarkable structured family learning time that I had the privilege to be part of. It is a perfect example of management and order without micromanaging your children. Do you recall my story about Jen and her family? You know, the family where I was late and all the kids had colds? Well, after Jen had finished reading to them, they all went into the room where they hold family learning time. On that day, Jen had added a box of soda and a bottle of vinegar to the closet. Her 8-year-old Luke asked what they were for, and she said, "Well, I thought you might like to make a volcano." Luke did not ask for any directions about how to make a volcano. He went to the table and prepared to dump the soda on the table to make a volcano. Jen suggested that he get a pan with sides so that the vinegar wouldn't erupt all over the floor. So Luke got a pan. He then formed a volcano with the soda, made a hole in the top, and poured in some vinegar. They all watched the eruption. He made the volcano erupt a number of times. Now, as an aside, this would have been a great time for a parent to be prepared to engage in a familiar conversation. Do you know what makes the bubbles when you pour the vinegar on the soda? Listen to all their ideas. "Wow, you guys made some good guesses. What happens is that when you put soda and vinegar together, you get a chemical reaction which makes bubbles." If they ask for more information, be prepared with other ways to show and explain what happens. If not, move on. You can add more chemistry to the closet in the days that follow. While Luke was discovering the soda and vinegar in the closet, his brother, 6-year-old Joshua, was asking if he could make colored snow. You remember we had had an unexpected snowstorm, and he had discovered food coloring in the closet, originally intended to color the vinegar lava. The lava never did get colored. He got a bowl and went out and got his snow and began mixing colors. When he saw the eruption, he asked if it would work in the snow. His mom told him she didn't know, why didn't he give it a try? So he made a volcano of snow in his bowl and poured in the vinegar. Nothing happened. He gave it another try. Still no luck. "Well," his mom said, "I guess it doesn't work in snow." By then, the snow was a muddy green-brown and was put aside. About that time, Luke was done with the volcano, but asked his mom what colors you could make out of the food colors that his brother Joshua had been using. She suggested that he find out. So he got some cups of water and went to work. Before he started, he went to the closet, which just happened to have a color wheel in it. He used this to mix the colors. When he had made all the colors on the wheel, he asked his mom if that was all. She looked on the back of the box and they found directions to make rose, aqua, and so forth. So he experimented with all those other colors. About then, I noticed that the bowl of green-brown slush was bubbling. I pointed it out to the children and said that it looked like a swamp, that chemical reactions occur in real swamps and make bubbles just like this. Joshua got some small plastic animals and put them in the swamp. Another aside. There are a number of ways that one could follow up on this theme over the next few days or weeks. You could add books on swamp, plastic swamp animals, cornstarch to simulate what happens in a swamp and how quicksand works, build a mini environment in a tub or a diorama in a shoebox. Decide if there's a swampy place in your area that you could visit, and so forth. Well, while Luke was making his colored water, Joshua and Nathan, aged 4, were watching intently. Jen told them about a story of when she was a young girl, her mom let them make painted toast. The kids all liked the story and the idea, and so they got the bread, paintbrushes, and food color to make pictures on their toast. I thought, food colored painted toast? Nasty. But the kids loved the idea. While they were toasting the bread, Luke said, "Mom, we ought to have juice with our toast." His mom told him that she thought they had 2 or 3 kinds in the fridge. Luke got the juice and the cups. The other children were painting toast. Then Luke had a bright idea and said, "Mom, I could have a juice shop and sell the juice." Everything came to a halt, and they made a sign with grape, orange, and apple juice on it and the prices. Joshua got a small cash register and play money out of the closet. They hung the sign up on the lampshade. Then while they ate their painted toast, Luke sold juice. Jen and I spent the rest of the school time helping each child know how much money they needed to have to buy juice and helping Luke make change. It was a wonderful school day. Jen was present the whole time, but she didn't micromanage or get in the children's way. She kept track of food coloring, set parameters for vinegar and baking soda, but didn't manage or stop the flow of ideas. She went with the flow. She didn't do what they could do. She didn't tell them what to do. She answered their questions and engaged in conversation. When we were done, it was pretty messy, but it was a great day. Leave kids alone and let them engage. I want you to know that Jen also has a 2-year-old named Anne and a 10-month-old named Autumn. While all the volcano and snow play was going on, Anne and I were making a puzzle. In fact, we made the same puzzle about 6 times. Autumn sat in her high chair, fascinated by everything, playing with a small toy. If I hadn't been there, Jen would have had to make puzzles on one end of the table while she observed the boys working on the other end. Remember, if you have a child 2 years old or under, they need you. That is real life. When you have structured family learning time, real life does not stop. You can see that Jen just did what she does every day, engages with the 2- and 10-month-old and observes and keeps the older ones safe. Let's look at how children under 3 use the closet. They will get everything that is for them out. They will move from item to item after just a few minutes or sometimes even seconds. You will follow them around. They want you to play with them just as Anne wanted me to make puzzles over and over again. Think about it. Isn't this how your toddler plays? They require you to participate with them often. All of your children under 5 will want you to play with them. If they are doing a project, they will want you to watch them. They just want you with them. If your children are older, say 6 and up, they shouldn't need you as much. However, let me tell you about a family with 3 children. One is 12, one is 11, and one is 8. Their mom takes a book to learning time every day. She rarely gets to read. When her daughters found a box of mementos in the closet and materials to create their own scrapbooks, they spent almost the whole time telling each other stories about each item. They shared memories. Every few minutes they would say, "Mom, do you remember this? Mom, remind me about this." When this family gathers together, they all want to be together. If one decides to read, they all cluster on the couch and read, each with a different book. If mom begins reading a book about chocolate to the 8-year-old, pretty soon the 12 and 10-year-old are right there too. If the 10-year-old chooses to make a puppet, the 8-year-old joins right in. Structured family learning time with a present parent can create a desire to be together. That is part of the magic. However, it may not work exactly that way for you. I want to tell you about Kendon, an 11-year-old boy. His mother felt that he didn't like structured family learning time and that he didn't want to be with his family. They have school in their library, which is a fairly small room. There is an 8-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy, besides Kendon. Kendon complained that the younger brother was just too noisy and he couldn't read. Reading is what he does for most of his free study time, that and math. After their opening exercises and family reading, he would go to his sister's room, which is right next door, and sit on her bed and read. Hence, his mother's observation that he didn't like school time or being with his family. When I interviewed Kendon, I asked him, "How do you like structured family learning time?" He replied that he liked it. So I asked him, "Well, what is it that you like best?" "Being together," was his response. As far as Kendon was concerned, he was with his family and enjoying every minute of it. It bears repeating again. When you structure time, everything doesn't always go as planned, but if you hang in there and honor the time and stay present, it will work out. Be flexible, be loving, be consistent. Now, reason number 4 for being present. Being present helps you focus on special projects and learning. Your children want you to be there if they need help with a project, and they want you to applaud their efforts when they are done. But don't help too much or too soon. Tannen is 10 and Ash is 8. One day their mom put a book on puppet making in the closet. Tannen is a project girl. She loves projects. There was also a sewing box of odds and ends, material, yarn, buttons, and so forth. Tannen decided to make a puppet after reading the book. She took an old sock and created Goldilocks. She didn't ask for any help. She figured everything out by herself, including looped hair. Ash wanted to make a puppet also. He watched his sister and then copied what she did. He wanted to make Superman. He didn't ask for any help until he got to the eyes. He didn't know how to sew on a button. So he asked his mom, and she showed him how to do it on one eye. He did the other eye himself. Then he asked for some ideas on how he could make a cape and attach it to the puppet. His mom gave him some ideas, and then he decided what to do and did it. They were both very proud of their puppets. It's important to remember that the project isn't your deal. Your deal is to be present. Their deal is to engage, explore, and learn. Let children do all they can. Reading directions, problem solving, and then doing are part of the learning. Depending on the child's age, give help when required or asked for. And when you have helped with what they ask for, give the project back. 5. Being present helps you know what your children are interested in. It's important to respond to every opportunity to follow up on your children's budding interests. Being present gives you time to hear them talk about what they are interested in. If you are listening, you will get lots of ideas for inspiring content for your closet. Later, I'll talk more about catching sparks from your children and responding to them. 6. Being present allows you to engage in familiar conversations. I love this quote by George Turnbull. By familiar conversation, children's curiosity may be roused much more effectually, and by it they may be taught a great deal more in a little time than can possibly be done in the austere magisterial way of calling them to a lecture. In short, a spontaneous conversation between parent and child teaches more than the best lecture. I want to talk a bit more about familiar conversations and both parent and child self-education. When parents are engaged in their own education, familiar conversations are enhanced even more. I am currently taking one formal class. I also read a lot and discuss what I read with other people. That is why I was able to engage my 10-year-old granddaughter in a conversation about our political process, and she was very interested. While traveling to a wedding shower with my sister and one of my daughters, we discussed at least 3 books. We are all self-educating. What a great drive that was. Don't be afraid to talk with your young children about what you are studying, learning, and reading. Sometimes we feel that certain books or subjects are too hard or mature for our children. Let's take a look at Lord of the Flies, for example. That is certainly a classic, although not one of my favorite books. And I'm choosing it because I know most of you would never talk about it with a child. There's a lot in that book. So can I talk to a 4-year-old about it? What about an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old? My answer would be yes. Yes, you can, and you should. These are the ages for teaching core values. This is a book that makes a person think about their core values. So how do we talk to small children about a book like The Lord of the Flies, if that's what we happen to be studying? Can we really have a familiar conversation about this book with small children? Let's sit together during a structured family learning time and hear what could occur. Dad, I'm reading a book called Lord of the Flies. I don't like it very much. It's sad. 8-year-old, what's it about, Dad? Dad, well, it's about some boys who are stranded alone on an island. They don't have any grown-ups with them. 12-year-old, what's sad about that? I'd love to be on an island without any grown-ups. That would be awesome. Dad, well, being able to do whatever you want might be good for a while, but what if one of the boys talked a lot of the other boys into believing or acting in ways that were wrong? 4-year-old, that's bad, Dad. 8-year-old, well, what did the boy want them to do? Dad, well, they really teased one boy who was overweight. 12-year-old, we have a girl in our class that gets teased a lot. I'm glad I'm not her. Dad, I guess we don't have to be on an island for people to make poor choices. 4-year-old, I wouldn't be mean to people, Dad. And that conversation could go on for a long time and take a number of twists and turns. And there you have it, a familiar conversation. Now, I know, there's so much more to The Lord of the Flies than boys teasing someone who's overweight. But the point is, that is one part of it that we can talk to our children about that helps them learn. The next time they hear about The Lord of the Flies in high school or read it, it will not be unfamiliar to them. It also opens them to think about how they treat other people. We as parent mentors need to be learning. We need to be discussing life, books, thoughts, and philosophy with those around us. We should attend book groups, take a class or two, teach someone else. And then we need to engage our children, our families, in familiar conversations. We will all learn a great deal more if we do. Being present allows you wonderful opportunities to engage in familiar conversations that aren't just, Seven, being present applies to life. If something is a principle, it always applies. When you talk with a friend on the phone, do you send email at the same time? When you are listening to what a child is trying to tell you, do you look at them? Or do you just keep working and say, occasionally? When your wife is talking with you, are you replaying a situation from work in your mind? It's a bit like eating meat without salt. Something important is missing and the experience is bland. People know when you are present and when you are not, especially children. Let's review what we have learned about being present. Being present gives you the opportunity to play, instruct, and share with your children. When you are present, you can model what you want. Being present helps with closet management and order. Being present helps you focus on special projects and learning. Being present helps you know what your children are interested in. Being present allows you to engage in familiar conversations which teach more than any textbook or lecture. Being present applies to life. It is a principle. Before moving on to Lesson 3, complete the thinking exercises and the to-do list in the workbook for this lesson.